From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents A Conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything that's in the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for April 23rd, 2017. We're moving quickly through this month of April. This is our weekly look behind the politics and policies that shape Chicago, the state, and Washington, D.C. So, yes, time to grab the Sunday paper, get that hot cup of coffee, and we'll try to get your day and your week off to a great start. Well, I can't even say it was a great finish. What can I say about the Blackhawks? It seems like we watched two different teams this season. There was the regular season team, 50 wins, great point total, leading the Western Conference with great play and great defense. And
then the sweep.
Then there was the one-and-done playoff Blackhawks. Little offense, porous defense.
None and done.
None and
done. There wasn't even one.
Right. Well, one series. One series and done. You know, I joked last week about whether the Blackhawks would come back to the United Center, and of course they came back, not to play, but to clean out their lockers. They had their clocks cleaned. I during one of your news breaks, Schwani, and Sam, I hope you'll apologize to you now, because I will be going out to Pioneer Court and I will set fire to my 2017 Blackhawks rally towel.
Well, now, wait a minute.
And I will be setting fire to the WGN cross off the 16 wins calendar, which got no use whatsoever. So I will use it as kindling out here to start the
You don't want to have an on-air ceremony for this?
Well, it's
you
radio.
You want to do it during a break?
It's radio. I don't think, you know, it doesn't carry the same weight to hear the crackling flames.
Ah, but it's theater of the mind, my friend.
Yes, it is.
We should see if we could borrow the organ from the Lutheran Hour. As you just light it up?
Yep, just play those. Keep playing those minor chords. Wow. It was really ugly.
Three goals in four games? That's it?
Yeah, and I still think Pekka Rinne, the Nashville goalie, ended up with more points than any individual player on the Blackhawks in the playoff series, with 2 points. I'm still in shock. I really am. I mean, I've my Blackhawks cap is now put away. I'm actually short of hats now. I've got my University of Minnesota Duluth Bulldogs cap I'm wearing, and you know, then again, you see Minnesota loses in overtime. Now St. Louis won that series. It's really been kind of funny, if you follow hockey at all, watching the Western Conference playoff games versus the Eastern Conference games, where they've, you know, for the most part, the Eastern Conference games were very, very competitive versus the Western Conference, where teams just went out to huge leads and are now continuing their quest for the Stanley Cup.
So how about this? The three teams that were bounced last night in the NHL playoffs, the coach for the team that won used to coach the team that lost in all three games. Mike Yeo used to coach Minnesota. He won with St. Louis. Alain Vigneault used to coach in Montreal. He won with the Rangers.
Right.
And then Edmonton beat San Jose. San Jose's old coach, Todd McClellan, is now coaching the Oilers. So all three got the last laugh. They all got fired and then beat the team that fired them.
It shows what a tight network that is in the coaching core of the NHL. But, yeah, well, but you got to know those coaches. They know the game plans. They know the players more than anybody on those other teams. And they know how to drop the game plans. But if the state of Illinois put a tax on the word unacceptable, we would not have a financial crisis because of Stan Bowman's speech at the United Center yesterday. I think he used that term about a dozen times in describing the Blackhawks season. But, I'll still be watching, but I don't have a team. I can't root for Nashville. I can't root for St. Louis. How about the Ottawa Senators? Let's make them. They're playing the Bruins today. And they can win that series against the Bruins. So I will go anti-original six.
And out of the country.
And out of the country.
And the news gets worse. Schwanny lost the key to the Zamboni.
Oh.
We can't find the key.
Great. Well, you'll have a lot of time to go find that key. There's not an immediate need for a Zamboni in Chicago
right now. No, as I said, I'm looking online for a new slip and slide.
Yeah, that's exactly what we need, is get the slip and slide going. Speaking of slipping and sliding, I actually stopped by Sox Park last night and watched five innings of seeing the Sox one hit at that point. I think they got three hits before I had to leave, obviously, for the morning show. But, you know, Sam, I'm looking at the scoreboard, and I believe five of the nine Sox starters yesterday had batting averages below 200.
I thought you were going to say you looked at the scoreboard and saw that big red arrow pointing down the logo for the stadium.
Now, again, I'm conflicted because my eldest daughter works for them.
Right, but still, it's ironic that they all can't hit and then the logo's a red arrow going down.
Yeah, well, and I think two of the five had batting averages below 100.
Cody Ashe is hitting, I think, 0.57 now?
It was 0.67 yesterday.
Wow. No, it's down. Sorry, he's got like one hit in 40 at-bats.
Wow.
It's hard to do.
Yeah.
And I noticed that about the third inning on the scoreboard, they switched off the batting averages just to do the, you know, for that game, just 0-for-1 or whatever. So I guess everybody kind of realized that the batting averages are really poor. So they've got one run in 23 innings?
No runs in the last 23.
No runs, yeah. Man, but a good crowd at the ballpark. They were actually guaranteed rate hoodie night at the ballpark.
Woo.
So they had a good crowd, and it was a bit chilly out there, but in low 50s. But I have to tell you, watching the mariachi band do the national anthem is always a special night at Sox Park. It was great. It was fantastic. That was, unfortunately,
I'm trying to hear that in my head.
That was, unfortunately, the highlight of the evening at Sox Park. But the Cubs keep rolling along. They're four in a row. I mean, at least we've got the Cubs. And we'll see what the Bulls can do this afternoon.
That's right.
I will say I was kind of surprised at how fast they fell in that second half of the return to the United Center. Against the Celts, but they can go up 3-1 today. A lot of optimism out there.
We'll see. You never know.
Well,
and they hadn't really talked about the Bulls much, you know. And
right.
Now here we go.
Well, that's right. So, I mean, we've got things to look forward to.
I found something, Schwanny.
He's trying to be Sunshine Schwanny here.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early what so proudly we hail, half the twilight last gleaming, whose brush.
There's like eight of them out there.
Now this was, that
keep
was
it
not
going. That's neat.
That was not from last night.
No, this is an older version.
Or the ramparts we watched were so gallantly sheening, and the rockets went glare, the bombs bursting.
Play ball.
Let's get one run.
All right.
Yeah, let's get a run.
Let's get a run.
No, but it was actually this mariachi band that played last night. They had violins, which I had never heard as part of a mariachi
band. I've heard that before, but it was, that would be neat. That'd be a nice touch.
No, it was very good, and you got to love the horns too. I mean, sure, that's just. Yeah, so no, well, it was a great time, and truly, yes, I'm a big Cubs fan, but I still love going out to Sox Park. There's, you know, frankly, it's always easy to get a seat.
It's easier to get.
And if they keep hitting the way they do, there'll be a lot more seats available. That's for sure. But
I think we ought to have a field trip out there, the morning crew. I have not been to Sox Park in a long time, so
we should
have a get together.
I think we could.
What do you think, Sam?
I'm in.
Okay.
All right. Good. Well, we'll set something up. Well, Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news, and Sam's here with the sports. Producer Jasmine's here to field your phone calls at 312-981-7200. That's our text line as well. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. We're on Twitter @SymbolSundaySpin. And engineer Bob is actually looking for the keys for the Zamboni, so hopefully he can find those. As always, if you have to tune away, you can find our shows on WGNRadio.com, and you can also get our podcasts at iTunes by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. Up ahead today, after the 7:30 news update, we'll be speaking to Rich Minacchio, the executive director of the Housing Authority of Cook County, and we'll be talking about President Trump's proposed housing and urban development budget and what that could mean for the agency and affordable housing. Dave's back with a news update at 8, and then we'll speak to Aaron Lawler. Aaron is the chairman of the Lake County Board. We'll be talking to him about the impact of landing a major new employer in the county, the world headquarters of Caterpillar, moving from Peoria to Deerfield. More news at 8:30, and then we'll speak to Democratic Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy of Schaumburg. He represents the 8th Congressional District in the Northwest and West Suburbs. And we'll talk about what Congress's return from a two-week break might lead to in D.C. That's all coming up, but first it's time for a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. New poll out from ABC News and The Washington Post finds that President Trump's approval rating approaching the 100-day mark stands at 42%. That's the lowest recorded at this stage of a presidency dating back to polls through Dwight Eisenhower's administration. Trump's 53% disapproval rating is 14 percentage points higher than Bill Clinton's 39% disapproval in April of 1993. And that was the worst rating before Donald Trump. 8 years ago at this point, then-President Barack Obama's approval rating was 69%. His disapproval was 26%. Busy week in national politics as always. We had, of course, the president last week across the border in Kenosha, Wisconsin, where he signed a Buy American, Hire American executive order at the headquarters of Snap-on Tools. He said there that his election represented a call to bring back jobs to the United States.
Together, we're going to do everything in our power to make sure that more products are stamped with those wonderful words, Made in the USA. The old days we used to use it, we don't use it so much anymore. We're going to start using it again. Made in the USA. For too long, we've watched as our factories have been closed and our jobs have been sent to other faraway lands. We've lost 70,000 factories since China joined the World Trade Organization. And you've seen that. You've heard about it. 70,000. The World Trade Organization, another one of our disasters. But this election, the American people voted to end the theft of American prosperity. They voted to bring back their jobs and to bring back their dreams into our country.
Now, also, Trump said that his executive order for Buy American, Hire American was part of his attempt to help rebuild a demoralized middle class in America.
With this action, we are sending a powerful signal to the world. We're going to defend our workers, protect our jobs, and finally, put America first. I see all the Make America Great Again hats, so that's a good crowd. Those are good hats.
Always the salesman, Donald Trump. That was the president speaking last week in Kenosha, Wisconsin at Snap-on Tools. Very interesting backdrop that they had. There was a American flag that was made out of crescent, or actually combination wrenches, kind of warped to look like make the flag look like it was waving. I mean, a very, very impressive company, as always. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead on your Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking to Rich Minacchio. He is the executive director of the Housing Authority of Cook County. We'll be talking about the proposed federal budget for housing and urban development and how that affects the issue of affordable housing at a time when affordable housing is really becoming more and more in short supply for low-income families.
Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, and welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio and Tribune Tower on a sunny North Michigan Avenue on this Sunday morning. A little chilly out to start, but temperature's supposed to get up close to 70. Although a little bit chillier downtown near the lake. I had played a couple of cuts of President Trump in Kenosha last week talking about Buy American, Hire American. And among the topics that he spoke about was his continued attacks on the North American Free Trade Agreement. And those attacks are greeted warmly by those workers who feel that their jobs were lost by globalization, though, in fact, most studies show that automation is really a bigger factor.
The fact is NAFTA has been a disaster for the United States, a complete and total disaster. And we're going to do some things. And we have all sorts of rules and regulations that are horrendous. Like we wanted started to negotiate with Mexico immediately. And we have these provisions where you have to wait long periods of time. You have to notify Congress. And after you notify Congress, you have to get certified. And then you can't speak to them for 100 days. The whole thing is ridiculous. NAFTA has been very, very bad for our country. It's been very, very bad for our companies and for our workers. And we're going to make some very big changes, or we are going to get rid of NAFTA for once and for all. Cannot continue like this, believe me.
Now, Trump then returned to the White House later in the week, and he hosted Italian Prime Minister Paolo Gentiloni. Gentiloni was asked about a U.S. role in Libya, and Gentiloni said one thing, Trump said another. Here's the translator for the Italian Prime Minister first.
We need a stable and unified Libya. A divided country and in conflict would make stability worse. The U.S.'s job is, the U.S. role, sorry, in this is very critical.
I do not see a role in Libya. I think the United States has right now enough roles. We're in a role everywhere, so I do not see that. I do see a role in getting rid of ISIS. We're being very effective in that regard.
So there you have that from the White House. Well, we're going to switch gears, and joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Rich Minacchio. He is the executive director of the Housing Authority of Cook County. Rich, thank you so much for getting up with me this morning.
My pleasure, Rick. Good morning.
Good morning. We have a lot to talk about because the president has unveiled his budget. We have the proposed budget for the Department of Housing and Urban Development, a budget that would be slashed by $6 billion, about, I think, believe 13%. But it's also where these cuts would occur in that budget that are of a critical point. Tell me how you see things going through those numbers and what that means for your agency.
Well, you know, I like to call this the doomsday budget, to be quite honest, Rick, because it does pretty much eviscerate public housing as we know it. But it goes beyond that. It's not just housing. I mean, you're going after some of the critical safety net programs that have proven to work, like Head Start, early education for kids, nutrition programs for kids that lead to healthier lives. So my big problem with this is, you know, during the campaign, it was, well, you know, we're going to do some things to generate some revenue. And, for example, some loopholes, and then to pay for some of the priorities that the president has. But that hasn't happened. We have not seen that tax reform yet, but we've seen the cuts to these domestic programs. And we have these programs now funded at the lowest levels already since the Eisenhower administration. And if any part of this budget goes through, you're going to see people become homeless. I mean, in the case of the Housing Authority, Cook County, we already have to reduce our housing vouchers by 800 because the continuing resolution did not keep up with inflation. So that's even before this budget gets passed.
It was already downsized even before the Trump administration.
Correct. And it's been on that downward slope for a long time, but this budget really takes it over the cliff.
Well, and it would seem, as we've seen, especially with kind of the income inequality that we have, that you also have the fact that housing costs more, and the need for low-income families is greater than ever.
Exactly. And in fact, when I was on the show last time, before this budget was introduced, that's exactly what we talked about. The fact that wages are going down, rents are going up, millions more people have worst-case housing needs. We need more, not less. And then this budget comes out and zeroes out some very critical programs like the Community Development Block Grant, for example.
And I want to talk, I don't want to stop you there, but I do want to talk about because that's kind of been a staple for economic development in urban areas.
It really has. And, you know, we have to be careful because a lot, as you know very well, Rick, doing this for as long as you have, budgets are political statements. But this is a pretty strong political statement. Folks say, well, you know, just like President Obama's budgets, they were dead on arrival. But this budget is so draconian that even if some of it passes, I mean, for example, CDBG helps towns and villages fix their infrastructure today. And, you know, we've heard a lot about an infrastructure program in this administration, but you have a program in CDBG that actually does this for communities, and it helps people repair their housing. It helps prevent foreclosures. It does a lot of things that towns and municipalities and cities depend on to take care of their lower income people.
And I mean, when you look at things like CDBG, you look at the fact, well, there's a promised infrastructure program, but we haven't heard anything about it. And then you throw in the fact that on Wednesday, the president is supposed to tout tax reform, even though the White House, the Treasury Department, appeared to be caught by surprise by that. And then the White House later saying, well, he's going to speak in broad strokes. So there just seems to be more of this kind of continued confusion. And then you couple that with where Congress is, and granted that you have a Republican-led House and Senate, but they're not necessarily on the same page either.
No, you're right, Rick, but what they are on the same page on, unfortunately, is I think that the president's budget aligns exactly where some of the Freedom Caucus folks are at in terms of where they believe government should be at.
Because about smaller, their smaller government mantra.
Exactly. But the problem is, and it's basic, if you're going to raise defense by $54 billion, if you're going to build this wall, and the promise is, and I think it's the right promise, not to cut or touch Social Security or Medicare, the only place these funds come from are programs like housing, EPA, things that, you know, keep
education.
Our quality of education. Things that matter directly to people's quality of life. And these are the programs that touch Americans the most. And these are the ones that are either being zeroed out or being cut significantly.
Well, so tell me what the status of things are at the Cook County Housing Authority.
Well, I mean, it's really, I have to say, very discouraging. We, you know, I mentioned the 800 vouchers. 800 is a lot of people. What does that mean, though, like in real terms? What it means is we can't house homeless families anymore that we had been housing. For example, through the school systems we work and we identify homeless families. There's so many of them. We had a great program. 25 families got housed. I wanted to house 100. Now those 75 don't get housed. I mean, it's that bleak. And I've got people calling me saying, Rich, you know, we're in the program. What's going to happen? And I have to be honest and say we don't have the money anymore. So we're talking about real lives here that are being impacted. And we don't have enough vouchers to begin with. I mean, if I opened my waiting list today, I'd probably have 100 or 200,000 people on the list. That's how many people need it.
That would be the list.
That would be the list, but I can't open it now and probably won't ever be able to open it, at least in, you know, at least in the near term.
And these are people that would qualify.
Exactly. The people, only one in four people who qualify for the housing assistance today actually receive it. And, you know, the overwhelming number of these folks, Rick, are working people. That's another thing that I think is misunderstood.
Right.
It really is. It's I think a lot of the safety net programs, people don't realize that these are hardworking people that are working minimum wage jobs in many cases. They need that child care to get a better job. And the child care is not there. The subsidized child care is not there.
Well, and I think some of the studies that we've seen, too, show that for the very low income poor, that you're talking about 71% of their income is going just into housing.
Exactly. And then what does that mean for the, you know, for everything else? You have to decide about should I fill this prescription this week or should I put food on the table? That's just not a decision that Americans, any American should be forced to make.
We're speaking with Rich Minacchio. He's the executive director of the Housing Authority of Cook County. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. (312) 981-7200 is our phone number. I'm Rick Pearson. This is your Sunday Spin. We're speaking to Rich Minacchio. He's the executive director of the Housing Authority of Cook County. We're talking about the proposed federal budget for housing assistance, the HUD department budget, but also just the overall federal budget and how that can affect people with low income. We've got a call from Ron. Ron, as always, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Yes, good morning, Rick. I have a question for you guys. About 2 weeks ago, the Tribune ran a very extensive article detailing lead in houses that the landlords are receiving payment through the Section 8 program. So it was very, very disturbing, where they had the evidence, and it wasn't even lead. It was some other regulation standards they had met, and they were still getting paid. So I'm very, as a taxpayer, I know we talked about cuts and stuff, but we can save some money when we are not paying people who are in compliance with that program. So I would like you to comment on that. Thank you very much, Rick.
Thank you, Ron.
Sure. Ron, yeah, no, you should be disturbed. I mean, there's been a lot of East Chicago, Indiana, for example, has a huge problem right now with lead in public housing. We're actually helping to rehouse some of those families. But the article that's the caller's referring to showed that in the Chicago Housing Authority, there was some evidence of lead-based paint in houses and where children lived, and the landlord continued to get paid. Now, that's obviously, and they'll be the first one to say, that shouldn't happen. We have a pretty robust lead-based paint program. So we make sure that if any lead is detected in the house, we move the family and stop payment to the landlord. That's the policy. So, you know, one thing they could think about, though, that's not obviously that needs to change on their part, and I think they will. But when you look at the larger picture, I mean, we're 2.2 million households in the country are being subsidized with Section 8. That's a lot of households that are being helped. Are there a few problems? Yes. But overall, this program works very well, and it works as it was intended to work.
Well, kind of in a related question of that is, when you look at this proposed budget, and again, proposed budget, but nevertheless, the issue of maintenance, and already I know that, you know, you, like other governments, have had to cut back and defer maintenance, and this would only seem to exacerbate that issue.
Yes, it would. If this budget were to pass, I mean, any public housing maintenance as we know it would be stopped, Rick. That's a good point, because it takes it from $1.9 billion to $600 million. So and we're in the process of rehabilitating all of our public housing right now to make it viable for the next 50 years. So any cuts like this would interrupt and most likely stall those projects. And the people that live in our buildings, as you know, are some of the poorest and some of the sickest in the county, and they absolutely positively depend on this housing. And we pride ourselves on providing housing that is high quality, just like market rate.
Well, talk about what facilities you do have and those kinds of
so
things.
So we have housing developments all over the county, all the way from Ford Heights, where we house families, and Chicago Heights, we house families. To the north in Wheeling and Skokie and Des Plaines, where we house elderly and disabled people. We've rehabilitated 500 units already in Evanston, Skokie, and Arlington Heights. We're on track to start a huge rehabilitation program in the south suburbs this summer in Harvey, Park Forest, and Chicago Heights. And the other thing, Rick, that people need to understand is these programs create jobs. For every dollar that's spent, for example, on CDBG, it's been shown that it leverages $3 in private investment.
Well, this is a form of infrastructure.
Absolutely. It is a form of infrastructure. It's, you know, you get a twofer. You put people to work, and you improve people's quality of life at the same time. So it absolutely is a form of infrastructure that's been proven to pay off for the economy.
Now, I mean, we talk about, you know, indigent working families, but also, you know, your agency also provides services to seniors and the disabled as well.
Correct. And that's a population that I have to say that's because of the state cuts as well. We're really facing problems. A lot of folks that need the help, for example, mental health services in this county. A lot of people that we house need those services. It's becoming more and more difficult for us to provide those. And in many cases, these people don't have family to rely on. And then, you know, then we're faced with a tough choice. You know, if you're a threat to yourself or you're a threat to a neighbor, I mean, you can't live in our housing. So it's really a cascading effect here with the state cuts and now these proposed federal cuts. It's not just low income. It's people that, you know, that maybe were considered or are considered today, you know, below that middle class.
Right.
It's a pretty big swath of Americans that are being impacted by the cuts in these programs.
Well, it is the shrinking of the middle class in this kind of age of disparate incomes.
Yeah, and that's right. I mean, at a time where we're at an all-time high in terms of income inequality, right? The rich keep getting richer, and it's not. This budget and the priorities that I've seen in terms of tax reform are going to unfortunately exacerbate the existing condition.
Well, and are there some critical issues with tax reform too, about, you know, developer credits and those kinds of things?
There very much is. The affordable housing right now, the only affordable housing that's really built in this country is through the low-income housing tax credit. It produces about 100,000 units a year. And if that isn't preserved, we won't have any. Now, the one positive thing about that is there really is some strong bipartisan support in Congress for the low-income housing tax credit program. I've talked to a lot of members about it as well. I was in Washington a few weeks ago talking about the credit to make sure that it's preserved. So I, you know, at this point, I'm confident that that will remain in the budget.
But it's all a matter of wait and see, and see what the fine print says when they get around to this.
Exactly, because that, you know, the low income housing tax credit could easily fall off the table if somebody else's priority, who's got a stronger voice or a stronger lobbyist at that point in time when they're marking up the bill, gets their say.
Things to stay tuned for.
Yes.
Rich Minacchio, the executive director of the Housing Authority of Cook County, thank you very much, as always, for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Rick.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on your Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking with Aaron Lawler. Aaron is the chairman of the Lake County Board. We'll be talking to him about the impact of Caterpillar moving its world headquarters from downstate Peoria to Deerfield.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome to your second hour of the Sunday Spin. Kind of spinning again through the national and international politics. Of course, we've got voting starting today in France. We'll see where that country leads to. 11 candidates for the presidency. If no one gets a majority, that heads to a runoff, which seems to be where that might be headed. Also, back at home here, we've got continued concerns about North Korea. Another American was picked up by North Korean authorities today. Of course, by now we know that the White House wrongly maintained that an armada was headed to the region when it was actually headed the other way to Australia for drills. But Vice President Pence, on his Asian trip, spoke aboard the USS Ronald Reagan and issued a warning to North Korea.
We will defeat any attack and meet any use of conventional or nuclear weapons with an overwhelming and effective American response. The United States of America will always seek peace, but under President Trump, the shield stands guard and the sword stands ready.
Now, also in the news, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said that Iran was complying with the letter of the law of the U.S.-led deal to curb Iran's ability to make a nuclear weapon. But Tillerson says the deal doesn't mean Iran won't eventually get the bomb.
This deal represents the same failed approach of the past that brought us to the current imminent threat we face from North Korea. The Trump administration has no intention of passing the buck to a future administration on Iran. The evidence is clear. Iran's provocative actions threaten the United States, the region, and the world. As I indicated at the beginning, the Trump administration is currently conducting a comprehensive review of our Iran policy. Once we have finalized our conclusions, we will meet the challenges Iran poses with clarity and conviction.
Meanwhile, another cabinet member, Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly, he addressed a group at George Washington University, and Kelly had some sharp words for lawmakers and critics of his agency's work.
For too long, the men and women of my department have been political pawns. They've been asked to do more with less and less and less. In many ways, similar to the treatment suffered by law enforcement over the past few years, they are often ridiculed and insulted by public officials, infrequently convicted in the court of public opinion on unfounded allegations testified to by street lawyers and street spokespersons. If lawmakers do not like the laws that we enforce, that we are charged to enforce, that we are sworn to enforce, then they should have the courage and the skill to change those laws. Otherwise, they should shut up.
Yes, that would be the advice of the Homeland Security Secretary to members of Congress. Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio in Tribune Tower is Aaron Lawler. Aaron is chairman of the Lake County Board. Aaron, thanks so much for getting up with me this morning. Always good to have you in studio.
Thanks for having me.
And never a shortage of things to talk about. But first, let's talk about some good news in Lake County, and that was the recent decision by Caterpillar to relocate its world headquarters from Peoria, Illinois, its longtime home, up to Deerfield. And actually, as I understand it, they will actually be taking over a place that was previously a corporate headquarters of some type.
Correct. We're very excited to have Caterpillar here. They will make our 12th Fortune 500 headquarters in Lake County, and so we're very proud of that. It's all about our workforce and our talent, and I think that's really what made the difference here.
Well, you know, when we think about, and of course there was a great deal of speculation as well, that when Cat said they were going to move the headquarters, that it was going to come downtown Chicago, and Chicago had very good success in bringing headquarters here into the city. But it also shows, and I think we even have a business columnist wrote about that, kind of the continued viability of the suburb region.
I think that's really important. The suburban economy is alive and well, and a lot of that has to do with our talent. Lake County has a workforce with 42% of our people that have a bachelor's degree or higher, so an advanced degree. We have access to transit. We actually have more reverse commuters, people that live in the city and work in the suburbs in Lake County, than any other county in the Collar County region. So a lot of great assets, and I think it's exciting for us to be able to celebrate this win because, as you mentioned, the city has kind of built a narrative that they are going to bring kind of everything down, and we're very excited that this worked out.
Now, if you could only get some more Metro lines or Metro trains running up there, because and I was using Metro up there recently too, but it would seem, given that reverse commute, that would also seem to be some kind of a priority, given, of course, what you have to deal with the freight lines that control the system.
It's the freight lines. We actually have three Metro lines in Lake County. But the one thing that we have that we have never had before is, for the first time ever, we have a Lake County resident who is the chairman of the Metro Board, and he's working collaboratively to figure out how we can adjust some of these schedules. We're not going to be able to add a lot of service with $30 billion in backlog just to achieve a state of good repair for our public transit system. Anytime you look at that and then try to add service, it's just very difficult.
Well, and you know, I had Rich Minacchio on prior to you from the Housing Authority of Cook County. We're kind of talking about maintenance and deferred maintenance, and that, you know, they're, especially, I guess, given the state of Illinois and the morass we find ourselves in, but this whole issue of deferred maintenance and infrastructure repairs and those kinds of things, that it doesn't seem like, well, one, you never catch up. We know that. But it just seems like things get further behind.
You're exactly right. And when we look at our pavement management for our Department of Transportation, we maintain a little over 900 lane miles of roads. And we try to make sure that we're testing that pavement to make sure that we can keep it in a state of good repair, not let it kind of fall off the cliff and then have to rebuild the whole road at a much greater cost. Unfortunately, the budget impasse in Springfield and the uncertainty in Washington are kind of putting the screws to us on that front.
So what do you do?
Well, we continue to dedicate 100% of our 0.25% sales tax to transportation. We've got a half a billion dollar road program, but we also have to look at where we can cut back, where we can partner with other units of government. We're working very aggressively to utilize shared service contracts and other things. But at the end of the day, we simply cannot take on everything that the state is falling short on. So we have to make those decisions. There are some things we won't be able to do moving forward.
Well, and then you look at the federal end of things, and you know, as we know, it's a proposed federal budget, and budgets are proposals, but they do explain priorities. And when you look at that federal budget, it's a shifting onto the states. This is not a good time to be shifting things onto the back of Illinois. And when you look at what Illinois is struggling with, and things like you know, talk about reducing local government share of the state income tax, ways to make off that, a property tax freeze. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you manage knowing that those kinds of issues are out there on the table?
It's difficult, and it's particularly difficult because we are not seeing a budget. We're not seeing everything being presented at one time. What we're seeing is kind of a little by little.
Bits and pieces and drips and drabs.
Exactly. But the fact of the matter is $135 million out of $420 million that we spend annually in Lake County comes from or through the state of Illinois. So over a quarter of our revenues comes from the state. So this type of uncertainty impedes our ability to plan, to invest in people, to invest in communities. You mentioned the federal budget. Lake County receives $3 million in community development block grant money. We receive $1 million in home money, which is for affordable housing, like your last guest was talking about. These are important programs. It's critical. And I'll take it right back to Caterpillar. The reason we got Caterpillar was because we have an exceptional workforce and we have great communities to live in. And these types of programs are what allow us, in part, to make sure that we're delivering on having those types of communities in Lake County.
We're going to take a quick break. We're speaking with Aaron Lawler. He is the chairman of the Lake County Board. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue, joined by Aaron Lawler. He's the chairman of the Lake County Board. You touched on this right before the break about community development block grants. And, of course, we talked to Rich Minocchio about that with the as far as housing. But CDBG, and that's a trouble, all of us that have dealt with government for so long, everything is an acronym or whatever. But community development block grants are, to me, they've like are kind of foundational for municipalities, for economic development, for, I mean, they're a form of infrastructure.
There are, and actually we have a portion of those dollars that go to public infrastructure projects in low-income areas. And then a lot of the money goes towards general assistance. Whatever the priorities that the county sets, each county has the ability to set those priorities. But at the end of the day, it's about investing in people and investing in our communities, and we rely on these dollars to do that.
And, of course, there would be zeroed out under this proposed federal budget.
My guess and my hope is that there will be some sort of compromise or reality check in the Senate where things will calm down, the money will get put back in, and we will recognize that this is not a just a handout. This is something that county governments rely on in order to really invest in our communities and economic development as well.
Let's go back to the state impasse and its effect on the county and county Lake County municipalities' ability to, you know, put together their budgets. And I hate to sound like a broken record, but unfortunately, because this budget impasse has gone on 22 months, it is Groundhog Day every day. But the fact is, governments are like businesses in that they need a certainty in order to know how to plan and how to move forward. And there is no certainty.
There is no certainty. In Lake County, we've had a long-standing mantra that if the grant goes away, so goes the position or the program in county government. This is really testing that mantra. But we have got to see something out of Springfield that gives us some predictability. Lake County is fortunate in that we have a AAA bond rating. We're one of only a couple counties in the state that have a AAA rating from both Standard and Poor's and Moody's. But we have got to have some sort of ability to see the end of this, to see the end of this tunnel, because there's just too much at stake. When you look at our budget, it's about 28% law and justice, about 28% health. And the rest goes to a myriad of other services, including transportation.
When you look at the prospect of one of the governor's conditions being a property tax freeze, Where do you fall on that? I mean, because there's a desire always to, well, let the locals decide. And in fact, the governor says that's what his plan does, because it would allow voters would have to vote by referendum on any proposed property tax increase. But at the same time, you're elected officials, you're elected locally, and that's part of the decision-making process.
Well, I would support the original plan, which was a two-year temporary freeze. At the same time, I would call for Springfield to appoint some sort of task force around property tax sustainability. You are simply not going to solve this problem without school funding reform, without looking at the assessment process in the Illinois property tax code. So we're just fooling ourselves if we're going to say that we're going to have a permanent property tax freeze absent a referendum or an affirmative vote, because that is a race to streets that are less safe, that we have less police on, schools that are less successful. We've got to get real about this and really focus on what drives property taxes and property tax escalation. They're unsustainable. Another thing that we need is real consolidation opportunities. I am very honored that we were added to the DuPage bill, allowing us to consolidate units of government that are appointed by the county board. But we need to follow the money, and the money is not in the CV drainage district. It's in these other larger districts, libraries, townships, park districts. I'm not saying we get rid of them, but why not look at outsourcing the back office? Why do each of these districts need an IT department, finance, procurement, administration, HR, so on and so forth? I think there's economies of scale there that we haven't looked into yet.
But you know why each one needs one, because it's all about a turf war. It's all controlling, everybody controlling their own turf.
Exactly. But this would get us around that type of discussion as quickly as possible. When you look at consolidation arguments, they quickly descend into who has what tax rate and who has what debt, so on and so forth. I think that there's a better way to do it through a shared service environment.
What do you see eventually coming out of Springfield? Do you think there will be a budget?
I have no confidence that we're going to see a budget anytime soon.
And so, so can the state use Lake County's AAA rating then, and borrow off your backs to bail everything out? Because if we do not get a budget by through the election, which is what everybody speculates, you know, we're looking at just a $24 billion backlog of bills in the state.
It's unconscionable. It's a dereliction of duty on behalf of all of our leaders. And, you know, in Lake County, we pay our bills. We have a balanced budget. We make our pension obligation like thousands of municipalities around the state. We all at the municipal level make that required contribution to IMRF. I don't understand why the state is so different.
If it was all yes, there is no answer.
No,
I mean literally, there is no answer of why the state is no different, except for the games that get played.
I think that's exactly right. And when I'm down in Springfield, it's a stark contrast to Lake County. We have Democrat committee chairs in Lake County. We have a bipartisan culture. We've got a very productive kind of work environment. And that really has allowed us to move things forward. And you just don't see that downstate, especially not now.
Maybe that's where the old Springfield has now moved, and they've relocated to Lake County, because that's the way it used to be in Springfield.
Exactly, exactly.
When it functioned.
Yep.
Aaron Lawler, Lake County Board Chairman, thank you so much for joining me this morning on the Sunday Spin.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking to Democratic Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy from Schaumburg, from the 8th District in Northwest and West Suburbs.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning. Temperatures are warming up comfortably outside, just out on the Storm Center patio, and the sun is shining brightly. Temperatures headed towards 70 degrees today on this beautiful Sunday in Chicago. Just one more cut I wanted to play through our national spin through politics. And this also involves another member of the president's cabinet, Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Sessions doesn't like the way that federal judges have been ruling against the Trump administration on some of its tougher immigration policies. In fact, he went so far as to ridicule a ruling from a judge in Hawaii by basically insulting the entire state of Hawaii on conservative talk show host Mark Levin's show.
We are confident that the president will prevail on appeal, and particularly in the Supreme Court, if not the Ninth Circuit. So this is a huge matter. I really am amazed that a judge sitting on an island in the Pacific can issue an order that stops the president of the United States from what appears to be clearly his statutory and constitutional powers.
That's right, a judge out there on an island in the Pacific. Not one of the 50 states? Who knows? Well, joining me now on the phone is Democratic Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy of Schaumburg. He represents the 8th Congressional District in the Northwest and West Suburbs. Congressman, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm doing fabulous. Thank you.
Yeah, you're doing fabulous because you're still off, and now we return to Washington on Monday, so you can get into the normal congressional funk. Well, we have a lot to, I mean, we have a lot expected, I guess, based on the what the president says in what's to come as he tries to rush and get some kind of an agenda of, I guess, a list of fulfillments for his first 100 days, a of course, artificial deadline, one that he ridicules, even though throughout the campaign he talked about all the accomplishments he would achieve in his first 100 days. But, you know, let's look at the fact that here we're hearing renewed talk about Obamacare repeal, if not replacement. I'm not so sure that even that's being discussed. What are you hearing?
I am hearing that, you know, we had a town hall meeting yesterday. I lost count of how many town halls we've had now. It was very well attended in Villa Park, and this came up over and over again. As many of your listeners know, the president and the GOP attempted to rush through something called the American Health Care Act. I call it the AHA Act, AHA, we're in trouble Act, and that failed to even come to a vote about 3 weeks ago. And, you know, basically this version 2.0 of that particular act apparently is getting teed up for next week. And I think it's actually worse than the initial version in at least two respects. One is it allows states to basically waive the requirement that health insurance plans have essential health benefits. You know, the things that, you know, most of your listeners probably take for granted that are covered by their insurance plans, preventative screenings, immunizations, cancer screenings, and so forth. So that's one problem. The second problem is that it basically allows states to, again, allow for the evisceration of protections against discrimination for pre-existing conditions, because it would allow health insurance plans to charge whatever the heck they want for someone's pre-existing conditions, as well as their gender and age. And so just as an example, if you were a pregnant woman and you delivered a child without complications, by the way, at the next time that your premiums reset, they could go up by more than 400%. If you have mental health issues, by more than 200%, or if you have cancer that hasn't even metastasized, it could go up by more than 700%. So I think these are disastrous provisions of this particular plan, and I think that, you know, I obviously am going to stand strongly against it, but I think the American people aren't going to be happy either.
Well, it seems like when, you know, back during the campaign and before the election, that one of the common threads, even among Republicans who had, you know, campaigned on repeal and replace, was there were, a couple of tenets, and one of those was coverage for pre-existing conditions.
That's right. This seems to be extremely popular, Rick. And technically, what Republicans, at least the GOP leadership who pushed the first version of the American Health Care Act forward, said is, well, we're not going to prevent people from buying insurance if they have a pre-existing condition. The problem is that if you allow health insurance companies to charge whatever they whatever the heck they want based on someone's pre-existing condition, it basically prices a lot of people out of the market. So it's functionally denying them health care coverage. And on top of the fact that they want to remove the subsidies from the health care exchanges for most people, and they want to end Medicaid expansion, you know, essentially they are going to strip a lot of people of health coverage. I think in the last estimate in the CBO score, 14 million would lose their health coverage in the first year alone, 24 million over 10 years. So this particular version, version 2.0, I think would only exacerbate the situation.
And it also sounds like with those provisions of allowing states to waive out of that kind of those essential coverage areas, that that is a move by the Trump administration to try to bring the Freedom Caucus back in the fold.
Right, but they're just going to lose I suspect they're going to lose moderate Republicans. You know, look, I'm going to be the first to admit that the Affordable Care Act has problems, okay? I'll just be very candid. We have to deal with the issue of rising premiums on the exchanges, and we have to deal with the fact that in some places there aren't enough options on the exchanges for people to actually have choices. But let's do it together. Let's work together, Republicans and Democrats, to get something done that would improve what we have right now. Let's not make the situation worse. Just as an aside, like a lot of your listeners, I recently saw the play Hamilton. It's an excellent play. And
how did you get tickets?
You know, I got it for my wife's birthday 6 months ago. And
good planning.
You know, yeah. And one of the best lines in that play, which a lot of people can identify with, is, you know, Alexander Hamilton says, "I'm not going to throw away my shot." And the idea is that he's going to make the most of his life to try to give back to his country. And the play celebrates his contributions to the United States of America. And I feel that right now, with health insurance, with the budget, with infrastructure and other issues, it feels like we're throwing away our shot. We're throwing away our shot at kind of bringing Democrats and Republicans together to try to get something done. And you know, we got to do this stuff in a bipartisan way. Otherwise, you know, these quote unquote reforms and other legislation is not going to endure.
But given the extreme polarization in Washington, where is the bipartisanship?
You know, it's interesting. I do see some bright spots. You know, I in particular, I've started a caucus along with my friend, Wisconsin Republican Mike Gallagher, called the Middle Class Jobs Caucus. Like myself, Mike believes that, you know, probably the central, one of the central challenges for our country is growing and strengthening the middle class. And so what we decided to do is pick a few areas where we thought that we could actually agree as two parties in terms of proposals to move our country ahead. So, for instance, modernizing infrastructure, providing career and technical and vocational education to our you know, students so that they have a future in the global economy that we see. That's one bright spot in terms of bipartisan cooperation. Another is I happen to be the ranking member for healthcare on the Oversight Committee. And believe it or not, I and Jim Jordan, one of the co-chairs of the Freedom Caucus, held a bipartisan hearing to tackle the issue of rising prescription drug prices. It was the first one in a very long time. And I think that there's a recognition among Republicans and Democrats that this issue has to be dealt with if we're going to, you know, bend the cost curve on health care long term in the country. So that's another bright spot. A third bright spot is I do think that on infrastructure, you know, I'm hearing a lot of talk about it, both at the federal level and local level, about how do we work together to get something done. I'm hopeful. My pet project is the Elgin O'Hare Expressway and Western Access to O'Hare. As you know, this Elgin O'Hare Expressway neither reaches Elgin nor O'Hare at this point. And so there's a good chance it's going to reach O'Hare if we can kind of get the right actions going in Washington. We have a lot of bipartisan cooperation at the state and local level as well, so I'm hopeful there.
And I want to talk to you about more about the idea of an infrastructure bill, but first we have to take a quick break. I'm Rick Pearson. We're speaking with Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy from the West and Northwest suburbs. We'll be back with more right after this. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase studio. And joining me on the phone is Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, Democrat from Schaumburg, from the 8th District in the Northwest and West Suburbs. And Congressman, right before the break, you had touched on the issue of bipartisanship and an infrastructure program. And we've heard a lot from the administration talking about wanting to do an infrastructure program. And I know that members of Congress want to see one, too, that would be a kind of a job infusion kind of thing. But beyond just hearing about, well, there'll be an infrastructure program, we don't really know any details. We haven't seen anything. And how do we pay for this?
So you bring up a lot of points, good ones. So we are told that the president is going to introduce a proposal on infrastructure any week now. I think that there's a lot of folks on both sides of the aisle who would like to see that move forward. And with regard to funding, I think that up till now, there's been a heavy emphasis on private tax incentives for infrastructure development. At least that's what's been leaked from the White House about their upcoming proposal. The concern is that while definitely, there are some very good projects that would make sense from that standpoint. There are a lot of projects that need to be done, but you know, don't pencil out or don't appeal to private investors. And so the question is, how do those get paid for? And you know, I think that you know, we're kind of waiting to see what the president says about those, because if he doesn't have a specific proposal on those particular types of projects, I think there will be a lot of disappointment on both sides of the aisle.
Well, you know, we hear a lot, and we've seen it locally too here in Chicago, about these kind of, you know, public-private partnership for infrastructure or those kinds of things. But yet, you know, we're not seeing anything of a significant nature. You know, there have been kind of small bore things. I mean, for example, your interest in the Elgin O'Hare Expressway, does that lend itself to any kind of private investment?
I don't know about Elgin O'Hare Expressway. I think that one, the Tollway Authority, has now, you know, over the past 20 years, they have basically collected the funds to complete that particular project. And it was supplemented by some state funds and federal funds for the study of the project. You know, there's numerous environmental studies and other logistics studies that have to be completed. I think that, you know, with regard to private investment in mainly greenfield infrastructure projects, those are the types of projects that, you know, where you're basically starting from scratch. I think that there might be an appetite for it, but again, you know, those types of projects are few and far between, and so you have to also consider the roads and bridges and right. other types of infrastructure projects that, you know, they just aren't going to be appealing to private investors, but they're still necessary because they're crumbling.
I want to talk to you too about approaching deadline of Friday for a continuing resolution for government
that.
Funding. Yeah, that little thing. And I'm very uncertain that something's going to be done given, you know, What is a condition? What isn't a condition? Is build the wall in there? Isn't it in there? Democrat concerns about helping the insurers to continue kind of those subsidies that make Obamacare work as it does now.
Right, right. So without boring your listeners to tears, essentially the government's spending authority for the budget expires at the end of April. So as a practical matter, next week. And so there are a few different options for going forward. One is, essentially having a clean bill, what they call a clean bill. In other words, continuing to fund the government at roughly the same amounts of money as it has been funded in the past fiscal year, through now, let's say. And then the other is a bill that would fund the government, but only with certain policy riders, riders such as building a wall, or a rider that would zero out cost-sharing reduction subsidies. That's a fancy term for money that basically helps people to cover their deductibles and co-pays under Obamacare. I can tell you, Rick, that if there are policy riders like that, I'm not going to sign on. I think that I have obviously significant policy differences and disagreements with regard to those issues. But secondly, they don't have any place in this particular negotiation. We want to, in my opinion, we want to move forward with a clean bill. And then let's go through regular order with regard to everything else. Let's have legislation, let's have a debate, let's have a markup in committees. And let's move forward with amendments and so forth. We can't do this, in like a hostage-taking situation type of approach.
So your bottom line is you're a no unless it's a clean bill.
Yeah. I mean, I can see, potentially something where perhaps there might be a rider that increases spending for certain line items to reflect current realities. I know that some folks on the other side, as well as some Democrats, would like to see some money shifted from line items that are no longer relevant to other line items. Like, for instance, Ebola funding was a line item in the last fiscal year because of the crisis in Africa and what we saw. And, that may not be an issue right now. So perhaps shifting some monies from there to other pressing priorities might make sense, and that's something I could accept. But, building a wall, zeroing out these types of payments as part of Obamacare, I think they're non-starters.
Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, Democrat from Schaumburg, the 8th Congressional District of Illinois, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Hey, thanks, Rick, and have a great rest of the day.
And you too, and have a great time in D.C.
Okay, thank you. Stay tuned.
We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, Rich Minacchio, Executive Director of the Housing Authority of Cook County, Aaron Lawler, the Chairman of the Lake County Board, and Democratic Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening. And now it's time to turn things over on this beautiful Sunday morning to the great Dean Richards.
I'm impressed at how Raja's last name just flies off your tongue without any effort.
I can actually even spell it, too.
Go ahead.
Krishnamoorthy.
That is correct.
That's why his commercials were Just Call Me Raja, by the
right,
way.
Right, of course. Yes, of course. Yes, I had him on once, and I mispronounced his name like five different ways, and he couldn't have been nicer about it.
He said, Just Call Me Raja.
Sure, it's something that happens to him 100 times a day, but you were. We should have like a politician name spelling bee for you.
Ooh. Well, that we could have that, or linguistics match kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yes, sure, go for it.
All right, I'll set that up.
Set that up.
Shawnee, right. Get right on that, will you please?
I'm working on it.
All right, thank you.